afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee for Monday, April 22nd. Committee members, we are now full-fledged into House bills. And as you can see, we have a little lighter agenda for now. I'm sure we'll be getting some more over. But first up, we're going to start with a hearing on House Bill 3448. So I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3448. Beth, if you can provide us with an overview.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 3448 exempts diesel fuel sold to facilities that store more than 50 gallons of diesel fuel for emergency power generation from the requirement to contain a certain percentage of biodiesel or other diesel with renewable components.
Okay. Representative, this, I believe, came from your committee, and you're going to explain it to us in a little more detail. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42, as well as chairing the House Committee on Energy and Environment. House Bill 3448 comes to you with unanimous recommendation of the House Committee on Energy and Environment, as well as the House, I believe, if memory serves correctly. I just want to outline a few parameters around 3448, tell you what it is and what it isn't. What it is, I think, a very simple concept that is ready to go and ready to be passed on. As you heard in the description of the bill, this bill applies to emergency power generation and storage of diesel for emergency power generation at 50 gallons or more. The issue that was brought to us originally by Oregon Health and Science University was in some of these very large long-term backup power generators, and you'll hear more about this from them, there can be an issue of diesel separating when it's stored for a very long time and not used. I want to be very clear. Regular diesel, unblended with biodiesel, will also go bad after a certain period of time, and estimates range depending on how it's stored and the temperature at which it's stored. Diesel blended with biofuel can sometimes separate out somewhat faster. It still takes a while, so it's an issue in these long-term storage situations, but it is not a referendum on the quality of the biodiesel that's in there. These are good quality products, and we're very happy with the biodiesel that's in there. This is just an issue of long-term storage and making sure that backup electrical generation is available when these facilities need it. Subsequent to OHSU bringing this bill forward, this concept forward, we were alerted that Oregon Public Broadcasting and other major broadcasters that operate the emergency broadcast networks across the state were also seeking similar exemption for their backup power generators. Thanks to Representative Boone for using a priority bill on this, we actually redrafted the concept and made sure that this exemption actually applies instead of just to the facilities at OHSU or just at OPB. It applies to all backup power generation at 50 gallons or more. So hopefully that covers the issue for folks that have large emergency backup generators and takes care of everybody under that particular exemption. So I want to thank Representative Boone for her use of a priority bill and Representative Tim Freeman for working with OHSU to bring this initial concept forward.
Great. Thank you, Representative. We'll see if there's any questions. Representative Boone would like to testify. I guess she's in another hearing, and hopefully she'll be here before this one adjourns. So any questions for the representative? I guess you've answered them all.
All right.
So before you leave, I was thinking since 2105A also came from your committee, which came out unanimously.
Do you have that today?
Yes, we do. Would
all
you
right.
like to say a few words? Because I can recess this hearing and then open up a public hearing on that.
Yeah. Could we go ahead and pass 3448, and then when Representative Boone gets here, she go ahead and testify on it?
Well, we only have a schedule for a public hearing today, so actually we can't do a work session since it has not been scheduled, but we will open it back up for her when she gets here for sure. So would you want to say a few words on this other bill?
I'd be happy to say a couple of words.
So I'm going to go ahead and recess then House Bill 3448. We do have a couple people that would like to testify on that, but we'll go ahead and I think open up 2105, and we only have one person to testify on that. So we might go ahead with that, and then we'll unrecess the other one. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2105A. Beth, why don't you read us the description, and Bailey will tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2105A requires the Oregon Department of Energy to study and report on issues relating to the Energy Facility Siting Council, requires that report be delivered no later than November 1st, 2013.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Jules Bailey, House District 42, and pleased to be with you on House Bill 2105A, which did come from the House Energy Environment Committee and came off the floor also, I believe,
unanimously.
House Bill 2105A is really a study bill and was brought forward after some significant work with Representative Cliff Bentz and the governor's office and other parties who were really trying to get a handle on how do we have a method of consistently citing renewable energy projects and understanding where they should be, how they should be cited, and what the standards by which that should happen are. This is really a steady process to try to get a better handle on it so that we're not putting the cart before the horse on policy decisions on it, but asking the Department of Energy to ensure some consistency in regulation and some certainty for those that are developing these kinds of projects to be able to better understand where and how they can site these facilities, what the requirements might be, and what kinds of mitigation impacts might go along with it. So it should be a pretty straightforward study bill, and would urge your support.
Questions? Senator Olson.
Rep. Bailey, you had said that this is a siting bill for renewable energy, or is it for any form of energy?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, it is relating to siting of energy facilities for FSEC. My misstatement perhaps was born of the fact that I think that the original bill, before it was amended, had been brought about by some challenges that had been encountered citing renewable energy projects, but my understanding is more broadly to FSEC citing.
Just want a clarification on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, and we'll have the Department of Energy come up afterwards so we can talk with them about the genesis of this bill as well. Any other questions for the representative before we recess this? And we'll go back to the original hearing now that Rep. Boone is here. Okay. Thank you very much for
thank you
bringing these both over. And if we have any questions, we will follow up. Again, this is because it's only a public hearing today. So I'll go ahead and recess House Bill 2105A. We'll reopen House Bill 3448. Rep. Boone, we were just waiting for you, and we went into recess and heard the other bill that came from your committee as well. So welcome. And Rep. Bailey provided us with a brief introduction in the bill. We heard it was a priority bill that you used,
yes,
and that OHSU initially came forward, and that it addresses the long-term backup for generators. And so if you want to
add
to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I do appreciate you accommodating me. I had two bills up in the next one. They put those together, too, and they're jostling those around. House Bill 3448, as you know, exempts facilities that store more than 50 gallons of diesel fuel for emergency power generation for the requirement that the diesel fuel be containing biodiesel. I'm not sure how much you heard about it, but it can be a problem, I'll put it that way. And there are two issues that this bill seeks to reconcile, and the first is that fuel stored for emergency power generation is never completely consumed and can sit around unused for weeks or months at a time, and because of this, it's susceptible to gelling, which can clog fuel lines and pumps, not allowing the generator to function, and that would be a big problem in the case of an emergency. Because of this, the gelling becomes more pronounced depending on the mix and the additives in it. The second issue is that we require facilities like hospitals and long-term care facilities and fire stations to have uninterrupted power to help safeguard our communities and loved ones. This bill lessens the possibility that the facilities we depend on during an emergency will be without power when they need it most. The bill did not receive any no votes in committee, and it passed the House unanimously. I urge your support.
Great. Thank you.
Be happy to answer any questions.
We'll see if there are. And I also noticed that Senator Bates is a chief co-sponsor on this. So I don't know, Senator, if you want to add a few comments or...
Yeah, I will add a comment. I barely remember signing the bill, but it sounded really good at the time.
It is good.
And since I've had a lot of experience with emergency power backup at various hospitals and my own office because we have vaccines there.
Yeah.
If you have power out for more than about an hour, the vaccines are ruined. So you have to keep the power going. So every Sunday night at 6:30, generator goes on automatically to recharge the batteries.
Yeah.
It's a really tricky system, but it really works. And gelling is a real problem with diesel fuels. I've had them gel in low temperatures, but primarily I've had them gel when we're out on the farm when we're using some mixtures, and we'd left it sitting in the tank too long, which, considering we had diesel cars and teenagers, hard to believe, but it did happen, okay? But, yeah, it can be a problem sometimes, but using the farm, you can handle it. It's an emergency situation we have. Mm-hmm. What we did in those cases, you throw kerosene into the diesel fuel and swish it around, and it ungels, and you can take off with it, okay, as long as not your lines are ready. So it's a good bill. I never thought about this when we were dealing with the bill itself. So,
well, there was another member of another sector that asked for this also, and that is emergency broadcasting. And you all know that, you know, when you hear that sound in the middle of the night, that you know, we interrupt this or whatever. Those are all tests so far, but we've had a few real ones. We had the tsunami last year. We have had Amber Alerts. We've had all kinds of things, but they need to make sure that their power is continuous also for the same reason, so they can be of service to alerting us.
I think we're going to hear from them in just a minute on this. So
thank
you. Any other questions for the representative?
Okay.
Great. Thank you
so much for
bringing this forward. We'll let you go back to your other hearings, and always happy to accommodate.
Thank you.
So we have Roger Cole and Dan Jarman. Anybody else would like to testify on this bill that did not sign up? Because that's all we have. Okay. Welcome, gentlemen, whoever would like to go first.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roger Cole, and I serve as the Ground Sustainability Manager at Oregon Health and Science University. I'm here on behalf of OHSU in support of House Bill 3448. House Bill 3448 would provide an exemption from the state biodiesel requirement for facilities that store more than 50 gallons of diesel fuel for use in emergency power generation. As many of you know, Oregon's renewable fuel standard requires that all diesel fuel sold or offered for sale in Oregon must contain a minimum of 5% biodiesel by volume. Because OHSU needs to maintain a 24-hour service availability for patient care, we store large amounts of emergency fuel to be used in emergency generators in case of a prolonged power outage. The challenge for facilities like OHSU that must continuously operate during a power outage to provide life-saving medical services is that biofuels have a limited shelf life, even in optimum conditions. According to the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, biodiesel blends up to 5% have much shorter shelf lives than conventional diesel fuel and can accelerate the degradation process, endangering the entire diesel fuel supply. The industry standard for maximum storage time of biodiesel fuel is about 6 months. Research shows that the fuel can stratify in longer-term storage and attract water, causing microbial growth. This growth can contaminate the fuel, creating a risk for malfunction of emergency diesel generators or boilers. Hospitals are required under federal law to maintain at a minimum enough fuel to operate continuously for 96 hours. OHSU currently stores very large amounts of fuel to support emergency generators for power outages and as backup fuel supply for steam boilers that provide heat to our campus. Emergency fuel supplies in our generator tanks are never totally consumed. They are always maintained to be at the ready to support patient care and research functions in emergency situations. This fuel supply can take years to be completely used. Currently, there are three exemptions from the state biodiesel requirement in statute. These include railroad locomotives, marine engines, and home heating applications. By including in statute an exemption for facilities that store more than 50 gallons of diesel fuel for use in emergency power generation, OHSU and other hospital facilities can be sure emergency generators will work in order to provide continuous patient care during a power outage. House Bill 3448 would ensure that if there were a prolonged power outage, continuous life-saving services would be maintained without risking malfunction of emergency diesel generators due to the deterioration of fuel from long-term storage. We ask your support of House Bill 3448, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Dan, why don't you go ahead, and we'll see if there's any questions.
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I'm Dan Jarman, representing today the Oregon Public Broadcasting. Thank you very much for bringing this important bill to OPB as well as the other broadcasters. OPB here in Oregon operates five TV stations in Portland, Corvallis, Eugene, Bend, and LeGrand, along with 41 related TV translators serving rural communities. OPB also operates 16 radio stations serving those same areas. On a voluntary basis, are the state's primary TV station or station for the emergency alert system. OPB receives no state operating dollars to do this. It's something that we do voluntarily. So emergency communications during disasters is very important to us, not just disasters, too, but also amber alerts, as it was mentioned earlier by Representative Bailey. We serve this very vital public service of communicating during disasters and other occasions. A really good example of the work of public broadcasting is during Hurricane Sandy in New York. The cell phones were out. Cable TV was out. The Internet was out. So people really had their radio, and it was the public broadcasting that was sending information to the residents of the greater New York area about disaster recovery and relief. So we play a very important service in the grand scheme of emergency services. So we need our emergency backup generators to work. I think you've already heard about the issues with the biodiesel and the diesel generators. Most of our backup generators are diesel, and so I won't really go into the details about that issue. But we're here to thank Senator Bates, thank Representative Bailey, Representative Boone, and OHSU for allowing us to work with them on this very important piece of legislation, and we ask you to pass it on to the Senate floor. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any question for these gentlemen? Senator Hansel.
I have a question. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Roger Cole.
Roger. Mr. Cole, I've got two quick questions. How much do you store at OHSU for? You said a lot.
Yeah, we've got approximately 100,000 gallons in storage.
My second question, follow-up, if I may, is that while it has a longer shelf life, it still has a shelf life. So how do you recycle that? You can't store it indefinitely. So what is your plan? How do you get it while it still can be used for something else, but yet follow what I'm saying?
Right, right. And so you're talking about the biodiesel component?
No, I'm talking about regular diesel.
Regular diesel. So with regular diesel, we do use a stabilizer and a growth retarder for microbial growth. The issue with the biodiesel is that it does attract more water than regular diesel, and so it has a higher propensity to clog filters, and there's more microbial growth that occurs with it.
Follow up. So, how long do you just store it indefinitely then? Do you ever use it for non-emergency situations?
We anticipate recycling through it about once every 5 years.
5 years.
So we have annual generator testing, monthly generator testing. So, but it's 5 years is a long time for shelf life for fuel.
Thank you.
And to answer that question as well,
state your name for the record.
Yeah, Dan Jarman, representing Oregon Public Broadcasting, Senator Dingfelter and Senator Hansel. We actually test our generators weekly. It's a requirement by the Federal Communications Commission. So, also one more thing, Madam Chair, I'd like to have submitted for the record a letter in support of this bill from the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. So, thank you.
Yeah, so we received a copy. Thank you. Any other questions down here? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And going once, going twice, anybody else like to testify on House Bill 3448?
My little piece of legislation.
Okay. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3448. I will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2105A. And Todd Cornett from the Oregon Department of Energy.
They're running out like flies now.
She knows how to clear
rooms. Welcome, Todd.
Smokers. Senator Dingfelder. Everybody left.
Well, we got a few folks for the other bill. That's what happens. You get the House bills over here and...
Well, but it perfectly worked. And
right. We can only hope. Okay, thank you very much. If you want to go ahead, Todd.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity today. My name is Todd Cornett. I'm the Siting Division Administrator for the Oregon Department of Energy. My purpose today is just to provide you some more background, so to give you a little more purpose and intent behind the bill. So to give you an understanding of council and sort of staff on this, the Energy Facility Siting Council is a seven-member board appointed by the governor. They have the responsibility for all large-scale energy facilities as they're defined in statute. Council members are chosen to be broadly representative from a geographic standpoint as well as a professional standpoint. And the Siting Division of the Oregon Department of Energy provides staff to support for the Energy Facility Siting Council. In terms of the process, the Energy Facility Siting Council process is a standards-based process whereby an applicant is obligated to submit all the information that's required to show that they meet all applicable standards. And if they can prove that they meet all applicable standards, the Energy Facility Siting Council is obligated to give them an approval. The process is a consolidated review process whereby all of the state agency standards and requirements, as well as the local agencies, whether it be city or county, their standards and requirements get consolidated into the Energy Facility Siting Council review process. The council actually has takes on those standards and makes decisions, so there aren't multiple review processes, there aren't multiple appeal processes. And any ultimate decision is consistent. And so it is an expedited review process from that standpoint because it's consolidated. So we believe that this is the correct system. We think the system works well. However, it's far from perfect. There are certainly opportunities to make the system work better. We recognize that. The siting staff has already gone through and done a full evaluation of our siting review process and has already started making multiple changes, which we think will have a lot of positive effects. However, there are certainly more things that we can do. There's more issues that we can study and evaluate in order to make the process more predictable, efficient, timely, inclusive, and transparent for all participants in the process. And so we believe that House Bill 2105 gives us that direction. The certain subsections are specific as to what we are required to study. Again, we've done a lot of those, started working on a lot of those already, and we intend to continue doing that. And certainly by November 1st, we'll be happy to provide that information to the legislature. So the second page or the second two pages of the handout include really an overview of Section 1, Subsections 1A through G, which are really the direction of the bill to the siting staff, the Oregon Department of Energy, about what we're required to study. I can go through those if you would like, or I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have about the bill or anything that we've done to date.
I was going to say, I think it would be helpful. Why don't you just quickly walk through, because we have not had a presentation about the Facility Siting Council. I've worked with them for years and I'm very familiar, but for some of my newer committee members, they may not be as familiar. I'm sure, since we have a former county commissioner here, probably very familiar with that process, but maybe you can just walk through that. And then the other is, I think you've addressed it here, but one of the questions I had, since there is a threshold, like for instance, you've called out on D that the wind facility threshold is 105 megawatts. Is that something also, that threshold issue that you will be exploring? Because that's been probably one of the biggest critiques that I've heard with FSEC is how we define a project. Because I know in the past there's been some projects that the cumulative size of the project would exceed 104 megawatts, but they divided it into smaller projects to fall under that threshold. And so I think that would be something certainly that the study should look at. So I'll throw that out there, but if you want to go ahead and walk through the bullet points. quickly, that would be great.
Sure. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. So you just wanted me to go through basically A through G. Okay, very quickly. A, means to encourage consistency between the standards for the siting of facilities of the federal government and local governments with those specified in statute. Again, as I indicated, you know, our process is that we consolidate all local requirements into our process. We work with the local cities and counties at multiple steps along the way, we reach out to them and either ask them for what their standards are, what their conditions would be, and incorporate those into our process. But there are always better opportunities. My prior position before I came to the Department of Energy was I was the Wasco County Planning Director, so I was actually on the other side of the process, so I understand where things work and where they can work better. So hopefully I will bring some of that aspect to the changes that we're making. With regards to the federal consistency, we have two large-scale transmission lines right now that we're going through the process on, the Boardman to Hemingway and the Cascade Crossing. Both of those are federal NEPA processes at the same time, and so we're trying to coordinate with the federal lead agencies on those. And we really haven't done large-scale transmission siting in Oregon in 30 years, so we're really working and kind of struggling through to make sure that those processes work well, don't require duplication of the applicant, and actually can move forward. So we identified that, we're working on that, but there are changes that can be made. Under B, subsection B, a mechanism to enhance the participation of local governments during the facility siting process, when the standards of the facilities, local governments are consistent. This kind of goes to subsection D as well, and this is one of the alternatives that we're going to be looking at is, can we come up with some consistent baseline standards whereby if the local governments adopt those, can we raise the threshold so we have confidence that local jurisdictions have a certain minimum baseline of standards for whether it be wind or solar or something else, that then we can justify increasing the jurisdictional threshold and they'll have more room to review things at the local jurisdictional level. C, means to encourage public participation in the design and siting of facilities. This is something that we certainly see people struggle with. Most people have never dealt with the Energy Facility Siting Council process. It's long, it's complicated. We have very significant applications. The standards are complex. And so we have identified ways, and we're working on doing that to make sure that the public feel more that they can participate in the process more easily, that they understand, that they can track it. And we're certainly trying to do more of that. So I think that's a good opportunity. Subsection D, the definition of energy facility specified in statute and recommendations to clarify the definition for purposes of determining which public body has authority relating to siting of facilities. We did this actually in House Bill 2820, which is the solar siting bill, and that we evaluated looking at it a little bit differently, which is what are the specifics on the ground? So not just a one-size-fits-all, this is the threshold, but that one was specifically we evaluated what are the, because the large utility-scale solar facilities will likely be on exclusive farm use zoned land, we looked at agricultural productivity and we came up with different thresholds, whether it was high-value farmland, arable farmland, or a non-arable farmland. So in order to incentivize a developer to put it on the least productive farmland, we increased the size, or the bill would increase the size for the solar facilities on the least productive farmland. So that, I think that's a good model of evaluating that, and it's discussed here a little bit as an example. In the wind energy right now, the threshold is 105 megawatts before it comes to the Energy Facility Siting Council. It's a one-size-fits-all. Maybe that's correct, maybe that's not. I think that's something to be evaluating to see if there can be any either differentiation of threshold based upon the specific circumstances on the ground or whether or not that should be increased or decreased. I just don't think it has been evaluated, I think, for probably several years. And the issue, I think, in that one specifically was tax credits kind of played in to people determining whether or not to be at 104 megawatts versus 105 megawatts. So, you know, one of the things we want to do is, you know, not incentivize people to just go under the threshold so they go to the county level either for tax incentive purposes or that they feel jurisdictionally it's more advantageous for them to go there. We want to create a system that makes sense, whether it's a significant facility that it comes to the Energy Facility Siting Council, and then if it's not, as we determine that it's not, it should go to the county. And so I think all of the different types of facilities need to be evaluated so they can be determined as to what's that jurisdictional threshold should be. Let's see. E means to ensure constructive and effective participation by local government, state agencies, federally recognized Indian tribes. Our process already allows for at least local and state agencies to get reimbursement for the time they spend on the process. So that's one thing. Getting reimbursed for it is helpful. Another is just us doing better outreach and making sure that people understand the specifics of the process, how they fit into it, and how they can most meaningfully participate. And we're already undertaking ways to do that. F means to ensure the efficient and cost-effective recovery of fees expended in the review of applications for site certificates. Our process is entirely fee-based. The applicant is required to pay all of the fees for staff reviewing the process, doing staff work for the Energy Facility Siting Council, as I had mentioned, for all local reviewing agencies and state agencies who participate and have an agreement with us. It all gets billed to the applicant. And so our evaluation on that is that there might be some issues that we need to deal with. We're concerned that that the way that the statutes are currently written, there may be some risk in terms of timing and billing, and we just want to make sure that if it is truly an applicant required to pay system, that that's what's going to happen. So we just need to analyze that a little bit more. And then finally, subsection G, any other matters deemed relevant by the department. We had actually requested that to be put in there because issues come up all the time, and so if there's something that we can identify that might be of value to report to the legislature, which could result in either recommended legislation or a potential rulemaking, we'd like that opportunity as well.
Okay. Questions for Todd? Senator Hansel.
Mr. Cornett, first of all, I'm really pleased that you come from local government, Wasco County, because my experience has been in the siting, particularly wind energy, which we did in Umatilla County. For the most, without exception, in my understanding, is that the local land use is quicker and cheaper. We're talking about 6 months as opposed to years with the state. We're talking about hundreds of dollars in fees versus, you know, thousands and thousands. So I think the applicants were incentivized because of the cost, among other things, to try to pare it down and to do that multiple, whatever it was, to have the county do the siting. However, when the county, as what I think has happened in Umatilla County, creates more stringent requirements than what FSEC does, the costs are outweighed for the fact that if they want their facility sited, it would be to their advantage to go through the state who, in order to get sited, even though it was going to cost them a lot more and it's going to take longer. So I think that's a real issue that we've all got to get on the same sheet of music. Whose rules and regulations, if they're not the same, are going to be the ones that have jurisdiction or rule, if you will, in these sitings. I know you got federal sitings, you know, federal issues as well. So I'm pleased to see that the you know, I'll be supportive of this, that it's going forward. And I'm particularly pleased that someone from local government will be intricately involved in kind of the shepherding of the discussion, because I think you have a feel for both what's happening on both sides.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, I appreciate that. I do have I was in Wasco County for 13 years prior to coming to the Oregon Department of Energy. Certainly have at this point much more experience at the local level than I do with the Oregon Department of Energy. However, I do understand, I think, both elements. You know, I've done I don't know how many numbers of conditional use permits myself. So I understand, you know, what the counties do, and I understand that we really do need to have a conversation with the counties, with the cities, to really evaluate what makes sense that we think, at least, to propose in terms of any potential legislation about what those jurisdictional thresholds should be. At this point, I mean, I can't tell you whether it's correct or it's not correct. I think the conversation needs to occur. Again, I think there's opportunities to provide maybe sort of baseline or safe harbor standards that if the county can choose, decides to incorporate those, then we can increase the jurisdictional threshold. You know, we just need to have that conversation, I believe.
Can I do one more follow-up?
Sure.
The other challenge is going to be, is particularly the wind farms, when you get into, you know, much of my district, the wind farms actually are on both sides of county lines. So one county's land use rules would be different than they could be from the other county. So that's going to be another issue I would encourage you to look at. And we even have one in Umatilla County that went across the state line into Washington. So we had to deal with those. But within Oregon, I'm hoping that we can get some uniformity somewhere along the way so that, again, everybody's kind of on the same sheet of music.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, I think that's a really significant issue. We certainly would be much more interested in consistency now that I'm on this side of that discussion. Certainly on the other side, I think local variation is important, and, you know, the local land use ordinances, to the extent that they can, need to reflect the specifics of that local jurisdiction, and we understand that that's going to happen. In some degree, to respond to that, so even if a developer is sort of lower, has a facility that's not quite the jurisdictional level of the state, and they're crossing two counties and they're worried about those different county kind of jurisdictional requirements, they can elect to come to the Energy Facility Siting Council, so they can raise their jurisdictional level, even though it's less than the statutory kind of minimum. But as you'd indicated, it is a more expensive process. Assuming there are no appeals, because I will definitely let you know that if there is an appeal and somebody knows how to go through the appellate process in Oregon's land use system, the appeal process will ultimately take the applicant a lot longer through the county process than it will take it through the FSEC process, because there's a guaranteed six-month Oregon Supreme Court appeal or appellate process in the Energy Facility Siting Council. So if that's the issue, then I think, you know, ours is a better process. But if it's not, then it certainly will be, you know, cheaper and more timely to go through the local jurisdiction.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Senator Bates.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to ask questions probably more out of ignorance than anything else. So I wasn't quite certain what an energy facility was, so I got the ORSs out and it's about a page and a half, and the things I kind of thought. Mm-hmm. But the last part says an energy facility does not include a hydroelectric facility. I'm not thinking of, you know, Hoover Dam here, but we're talking more and more about very small hydroelectric facilities that are, you know, that are in line from irrigation ditches or other sources. Where do those people go to get get a certification or licensure for doing that? Are they excluded from that? I mean, what's the process?
Senator Dingfelder, Senator Bates, the Oregon Water Resources Department is the jurisdictional entity that would evaluate any hydroelectric facilities. So I believe that originally it used to be within the energy facility. I don't recall when, but that was exempted out clearly from our statutes, and it's no longer within the jurisdiction of the Energy Facility Siting Council.
I was going to say that's correct. It's Water Resources Department. When we had the hearing on the in-conduit hydro, that's why we had Water Resources Department here. It's also, depending on the size, there's a threshold with FERC. Any large hydro projects for relicensing have to go through FERC.
Yeah, I expect that. I was thinking about the small ones. So.
Yeah, Water Resources Department.
So strangely enough, it's the Water Department that does that.
Well, because these are in streams and rivers, and so the major issue is going to be around fish and fish passage.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Great. I just wanted to say thank you. I think we are fortunate to have you here because, as Senator Hansel said, having that local experience, I think, is really valuable, and cross-pollinating between the local and state experience is very important. We're Certainly going to be looking forward to hearing the results of the study later this year, since it says that you will be delivering them to an interim committee such as ours before November 1st, 2013. And so we look forward to hearing the recommendations that you come up with. One thing I just will mention as far as the threshold issue, I guess the flip side is making sure that there's not an undue burden on local governments, especially for some of these complex fish and wildlife. I mean, I've been hearing a lot about, we've all been hearing about sage grouse, and we all know about some of the wildlife migration corridors. And so certainly thinking about the ability of local governments to access those resources is sort of the flip side, and that there's not an undue burden on already strapped local governments.
Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, I completely agree. Again, being on the other side of that, you know, while most, you know, county planning departments, you know, have certain areas of expertise, and, you know, a lot of those will probably be in the exclusive farm use zone, doing energy facility siting is not typically one of them. There are a lot of nuances associated with it, and which is why that there is a threshold to go to the state. And so I certainly recognize your concern, and that's why we fully intend to have that communication with the counties and the cities to make sure, you know, what their interests are, and try to come up with something that makes sense for the counties, the cities, the state, as well as the developers.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your testimony today. And is there anybody else that would like to testify in House Bill 2105A? Just people just hanging out because they're having a good time back there. Okay. So with that, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2105A. And Beth, is there anything else that we have to take care of today?
Today, Madam Chair.
All right. So with that, we are adjourned, and we'll see you on